Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Hello and welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. I'm back. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and this week we will be talking about the Switch's year in review so far, and if any Nintendo Switch games could maybe have a chance at Game of the Year? I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll also be talking about Star Fox 64's anniversary, Kazuya in Smash, and Legend of Mana, and even more, if you can believe it. This week, I am joined by Per Schneider.
Hello.
Seth Macy.
What's up, Super Ninfriendos?
Hello. And Tom Marks.
Hello.
Hi. How's everyone doing today? I hope everyone had a good last week away from E3. Decompress, maybe?
Oh my God.
It never stops.
Never stops. I know
we're planning Gamescom, actually.
Yeah, we are, for the second to last week of August, right? Like August 25th, I believe. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely have a lot going on for that this year, like we did last year, I assume. But let's talk about the year so far for the Nintendo Switch. We've got 5 games that got 9s and 9 games that have scored 8s at IGN.com. We've actually had no 10s for the Switch since 2018, and I think we can all guess which games those were. Actually not. No, we can't. Well, I know one of them was Celeste. I don't remember the other one off the top of my head, but that doesn't matter because that's not in 2021. So let's talk about some of our favorite games that have come out for the Nintendo Switch so far, and any that we think could make it. I know, Tom, you have reviewed quite a few games on this list. Same thing with you, Seth, and Pear. I know you've played pretty much everything. But maybe we should start with the game that is most recent that has gotten a 9. That's Griftlands, which I have very regrettably not played yet. But Tom, I know you've played it.
It's so good. Yeah, Griftlands is just phenomenal. I haven't been on the show in a while, and so I haven't been able to talk about this game, but like, yeah, it's from Clay, right? So they are I love Clay because basically they change genre every single game and every time they make a great game, right? Like they're just jacks of all trades in that way. And like, Griftlands is basically a Slay the Spire-esque roguelike card battler, except with a lot of twists of its own and also a really, really good story and storytelling and like dynamic storytelling. This game is just phenomenal to me. Like, I love Slay the Spire. I think Slay the Spire is infinitely replayable in a way that a roguelike should be, whereas Griftlands feels like someone took that concept and was like, what if we made this a really good storytelling engine as well? I'm in love with this game. I'm super glad it got a 9. I really cannot advocate for it enough, especially if you like Slay the Spire. But honestly, if you just like weird procedural RPG storytelling too, it's like really, really good for that.
I'm sorry, the whole time my dog was standing next to me making tauntaun noises. That's why I wasn't able to concentrate. But would you say, Tom, would you say Griftlands has a chance at nabbing overall game of the year or Switch game of the year like Celeste did? Celeste was a bit of a surprise, right?
Right.
Or do you think it's a really great game, but you think there'll be bigger things to come?
I think it depends a little bit. This game is going to be in my shortlist, I think, for game of the year, but not like, probably not like way high up there. Like, it is not currently my game of the year, okay, but I do think it is absolutely one of the best games to at least have come out this year so far.
Man, I really need to play this game. I actually ended up downloading Rise of Slime instead. But before this game came out, because people were talking about it on our podcast forums on Facebook, and I did not get into it like I did with Slay the Spire. I was a little frustrated with some of the mechanics. Like in Slay the Spire, you can press a button to read about like what does burn do, and then you can just read the definition of what that does. And that was something that Rise of Slime was missing. So I'm wondering if Griftlands could fill that void for me. Even though, like as you said, Slay the Spire is infinitely replayable.
Yeah, and this game is really good at that sort of stuff too. Those tool tips and that sort of thing. Rise of the Slime was interesting to me too because it got a lot of like pretty nice reviews while it was in early access, and then it left early access and basically the narrative just flipped on it and everyone was like, actually this game feels like it needed more time in the oven, and that was very surprising to me. But
Well, I need to check out this deck building roguelike. Do you think it could win like maybe best RPG or anything else like that?
I mean, I'm definitely going to be nominating it for some stuff like best strategy, best story. It's really, really cool. One of my favorite parts about it is basically like, it has a ton of characters that are all like, the characters are not procedurally generated. They are all set designed characters, and there are dozens and dozens of them. And you can even have like basically a Pokedex style thing of like all the characters you've met and if you've made them your friends or if you've made them your enemies. Like it has all these checkboxes for all that stuff. But what's procedural about the characters is how they're slotted into a run. So one time you might become best friends with some person, and then the next run you play things a little bit differently or they show up in a different spot and suddenly you've like murdered them on the first day of the campaign, right? Like, and it's just really cool how that combination of these handcrafted characters who are interesting and have little personalities of their own but then can show up sort of wherever and in unexpected places is just a really, really neat combo of that, of how to use procedural without making it just feel entirely random.
I got a question. If you were writing copy for a Nintendo Direct, how would you describe how this game is coming to the eShop? Would you say Griftlands deals its way to the eShop?
God.
This sounds like your wheelhouse.
This is your job, Seth.
Yeah.
I'm just asking questions here.
I think it sounds like you may have nailed it.
Yeah, I don't think I can do better than you, to be perfectly honest.
That's the most succinct way to describe a game. How would the eShop introduction be at the end of a Nintendo Direct?
But speaking of other games that got nines that are also roguelites, I did want to also mention Curse of the Dead Gods, which also got a 9, reviewed by Hazel Saltzman. This is he says it's a great action, smart strategy, and random curses carry Curse of the Dead Gods to top tier of action roguelike genre. So I think kind of similar to Hades, but not Hades. I think it's like how he kind of described it to me previously.
It's really an amalgamation of like a bunch of different, I think we've talked about this before, but it's like it takes ideas from so many different roguelike action games and kind of mixes them all together in a way that makes it feel like its own. I enjoyed this game too, probably not nearly as much as Hades, but that's also a really, really high bar, and it is still just a very fun game on its own.
And then also in the nines, we have Subnautica Below Zero, which is, it says Subnautica is a survival game with focus and an excellent sci-fi story, but its greatest achievement is its underwater horror. I've not played a lot. I don't think I've played any of these nine games so far this year. I'm really slacking.
I've talked about Subnautica a bunch before, but my son was obsessed, or is obsessed, with that game, and it is very, very dearly beloved, and I do want to catch up on it before Game of the Year vote. We luckily have a little bit of time, but I do think that's a... It's going to be up there for some genres, I think.
Then we've also got Knockout City, and the reviewer says Knockout City's fantastic spin on dodgeball combat has surprising depth, making it one of the best team-based PvP games in years. It's free on the Switch. I should just play it. I have friends. You guys are friends. We should play Knockout City.
There you go.
Have any of you played this?
Just a bit of it. Not a ton of it. It's not totally my kind of game. It's kind of a fighting game in disguise a little bit, in terms of mechanics. And this was a game that I think surprised everyone, right? Like, there's so many, just to be totally brutally honest, so many failed arena shooters nowadays, so many battle royale sort of like, it looks kind of like Fortnite and is just sort of copying that. And it's easy to look at something like Knockout City and be like, all right, this is just another one of those. And apparently it is not, that's not fully fair, right? It is, it's doing something different, and it is doing it really, really well. This is, however, one that I think hasn't had as much staying power as you would maybe expect for how surprisingly fun it was. It kind of took the world by storm for a little bit and then sort of quieted down since then. So that's, you know, a little unfortunate to see when you see, you know, there are so many sort of derivative types that to see one doing something unique and everybody kind of celebrating that, it's a shame that it's not kind of getting a little more continued recognition in that way. But, you know, there are a lot of games out right now.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, my multiplayer game for the past couple of months has been Monster Hunter Rise, so I just haven't really been touching any other multiplayer games, and Knockout City is one of them. But I feel like that's going to be my excuse for the rest of time, so I should just not even bother saying that anymore. But we also have Hitman 3, but I would argue that Hitman 3 is best played on not the Switch.
It's a streaming game, right? On Switch, so I doubt that it'll be up there for any sort of awards consideration, because it is, you know, it is just not quite the same, but it, you know, at least it's a competent way to bring a more graphically intense game to the Switch. Yes. The game itself is great. I mean, I love those dumb games, man. They're just such great sandboxes to mess around with. And like, you could argue that the AI in these games is always really stupid, right? Like, it's like the way the characters don't see you or don't see when you shoot somebody next to them is not the most realistic, but it makes for this very easily understood game world where you know the exact rules and what will trigger something, and so you can just have a lot of fun with it. They're just such fun games always.
And you can turn up the difficulty so that they like hear footsteps really accurately, right, and that sort of thing. So that is available for people who want even a more difficult challenge there, more realistic quote unquote challenge. Not that I think anything about that game is particularly realistic.
No.
So those are the five games out on the Nintendo Switch right now that have all received nines, which is for amazing on IGN.com. But we have quite a few more eights out from this year so far, nine of them to be exact. We're not going to go into detail about every one of them, but I think we should call out some of them we think could possibly get some awards this year. And I definitely want to call out Monster Hunter Rise is one of those. Tom, I know you reviewed that, but I think Monster Hunter Rise is probably, actually it is, my game of the year so far. And I think,
what?
I know, who would have thought? Who would have thought
it's
that
like,
Casey's game of the year so far was Monster Hunter Rise?
This is a huge shock for everyone listening and us. I actually, looking at the whole list of games for Switch out this year, I think, honestly, Monster Hunter Rise is the only one that could be as a game of the year contender.
Yeah.
So far. Mm-hmm. The year is young.
Yeah, I would
not actually.
I wouldn't
we're
disagree.
More than halfway through it. The year is actually is middle age.
Oh gosh,
still young. Most big games come out in the last quarter of the year.
Yes, holiday. Yeah.
It's going to have a lot of competition, but
this game is probably my contender right now for Switch game of the year for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would. I think I would probably put it in the nominations for game of the year. I agree with that, but I also don't think it is my overall game of the year necessarily. I've been like, frankly, I love this game still. I think it is really, really great. Obviously I gave it a very positive review. But I have been a little disappointed with the post-launch stuff. And kind of the roadmap going forward with this game, the fact that there's the updates that they did the 1 month after release and then 2 months after release were like, really great, but not like as meaty as I was expecting them to be necessarily. And then like now we just have basically Capcom collabs on the horizon and that's it. And it's like, it's not, you know, obviously there's a lot to this game already and it's a very fun game, but I was just like, I was hoping it would have a little bit more kind of to pull me in consistently over these few months. And it hasn't done that as much for me, unfortunately. But that being said, I don't want to be super negative on it because it is, you know, the changes it makes to combat in Monster Hunter are just so phenomenal that it like, it's just a blast of a game still.
It's really fun. It's significantly more accessible than previous Monster Hunter games as well. But yeah, I'm also in a kind of a weird spot. I'm not totally sure if I put in less hours into Rise than I did in World because I lost interest faster or because I started play, it causes me physical pain to play too long, so I'm not totally sure. I kind of like, if I play Monster Hunter Rise for a day, I can't play any other games that day, so right. I'm not totally sure.
That does muddy the waters.
Yeah, it does muddy the waters for me, because I'm pretty sure I probably would have put in another 100 hours into this game than I have already, but I don't know. I can't be sure. But I like it, and it's fun. But there are other games on this list that we should talk about, including Bravely Default 2, which Seth reviewed.
Hey, I really like that game. I gave it an 8. No way that's going to be game of the year in any category.
What about any categories? What about RPG?
I don't think it'll be the RPG. I mean, look.
There are a lot of
RPGs
out.
A lot. But there are, there's a lot of RPGs. And I mean, I think everybody should play Bravely Default, especially if you love like the old school sort of JRPG flavor, because that's what this one has. Not for everybody. And that's why I think it's not going to be. I mean, it'll be like, I don't know, runner-up.
Yeah.
Or honorable mention, but I love it. It's great. It's not going to win any awards, unfortunately, for Game of the Year.
And of course, we have new Pokemon Snap, which I also don't think will be put into the Game of the Year nominations. But I also don't know what other category specifically it would belong to.
What genre is it exactly? Yeah. It's always tough for games like that. You know, like and Game Builder Garage is obviously on the list too. Like those are kind of. When it comes to giving awards in categories, you usually keep it to the big ones, right? That people are most interested in, like role-playing and first-person shooter and all of that, where people are making actual decisions. Whereas like in the make-your-own-game category, there are not that many entries that you need to have a category breakdown. But that's not to say that these games aren't, it's their breath of fresh air and that they're not a tried-and-true genre and do something different. It's always tough for games like that to stand out. Like, go back in time and like look at Wii Fit, games like that were really or Brain Ring Training Fit. Or Ring Fit or right. Picross, any of that stuff. And like they're never gonna win a Game of the Year award, but they're always good.
Mm-hmm. thing that's cool about Game Builder Garage is there could be a future Game of the Year programmer learning now how to make games with Game Builder Garage.
There you go.
Yeah. I did play some Game Builder Garage, and I am so impressed with some of the games that people have made in here. It's incredible.
I know,
Seth,
it's awesome.
I played your game, and then I went over and played a flat.
And then you played some that you were impressed by.
No, I had fun with it. I got the, what was it?
Oh, the secret 1 billion secret space points or something?
I got the 1 billion space points, and I felt extremely accomplished. And I you know, I was like, you know what? I could retire video gaming right now. I have all the space points. Why would I even bother?
Yeah.
But then someone told me that someone remade Doom, Flappy Bird, and oh my gosh.
GTA.
I played a PT remake in Game Builder Garage, and I actually screamed. So
they're very clever. It's not like Dreams or it is definitely a little simpler what you get out of the game, and like the games are shorter, and but like people are doing like top down GTA clones and stuff like that, which is just just cool. It is definitely a really, really creative app. I'm looking forward to seeing what people create in the next year. Like, people are going to hack this thing and really figure out some cool stuff.
We should do a subcategory, Game Builder Garage Games of the Year.
There you go.
Whoever makes the best game.
We should go back and look at that. But man, looking at the like design that goes into those games, like in the back end, like what you're seeing on screen if you're watching right now, just like makes my brain hurt. I'm sure I'd understand it if I went through all the tutorials, but I did not do
that. That's like 8 hours worth of tutorials, or maybe even more.
Yeah. Which are fun and entertaining, but it's a lot. It's what you need to be able to actually make those games that I am so impressed by.
It has a compelling story too. I don't understand it, but you fall in love with the little characters.
Yeah, they're really cute. I like them a lot. But we also have a few other games on that also got eights, including Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, Persona 5 Strikers, which Tom reviewed.
Yeah.
Tom, does it stand a chance in any category this year?
I don't know. Maybe action game?
Okay.
I don't think it will have the support it needs for that sort of stuff, though.
Yeah.
It's a great action game. It's a weird one for the Switch, right? Because I frankly would not recommend this to anybody who has not played Persona 5 necessarily. It's still a great game, but like it is so much of it is tied into the story and the characters and what you already know of them that it's a little a little weird to play this game without having experienced all that. So like for this, it would be hard to recommend it even for like best Switch game when like a lot of its history is not on the Switch. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking like Persona 5 proper. I think that would have been my game of the year when it came out, like when 2016. I think at IGN, we picked Overwatch that year. And I just, you know, like the proper 5 mainline RPGs, just such a defining game. I think it was 2016, right?
It came out in 2017 in the US.
Oh, it came out a year later in the US. That's right.
And
What did we pick?
Well, that was the year that Breath of the Wild and Horizon and all those other great games came out as well. Biggest regret is not nominating Persona 5 for Best Music that year. I was insane. I hadn't been able to put in enough hours that year because it came out right around the time as Horizon and Breath of the Wild. So I just like...
That's right.
And that's something Strikers could definitely be nominated for as music.
Yeah.
Not all of its music is incredible or as incredible as Persona 5 Base or Royal, but like it's still got really, really good remixes and really good music in it. So that's something I could definitely see it nominated for here. It's a great, great action RPG. It's just like I think its reach is a little bit more limited because I think it's one of those games that's gonna have come out in February and everyone's gonna forget about by the time Game of the Year rolls around, unfortunately.
This year I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener. I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with, like, Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Yeah.
Then we also have Blue Fire, Skull the Hero Slayer, and Cyber Shadow, all of which also got 8s, which none of us here reviewed. But any of you have anything specific you want to say about any of those before we move on?
All good action games, right? Yeah. All good action platformers, basically, that are worth checking out 100%. That's the thing, right? Just because something's not Game of the Year necessarily, we don't think is going to like make Game of the Year, doesn't mean it's not worth checking out. I'd still totally recommend Skull. I know Brendan really liked Blue Fire, and I haven't played Cyber Shadow much, but I know Mitchell also really liked that.
Slashing its way to the eShop.
Yeah, he compared Cyber Shadow to like a Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
Like the old school Ninja Gaiden. Not
I think generally this year it's still, I'm at this point where I'm like, it's too premature to talk about Game of the Year. Obviously you can put candidates on the watch list. Whereas like in previous years, you would have had like a January release for a Resident Evil game or, you know, big game dropping in March on the PlayStation. But this year is definitely a little different. And they're awesome games. Like I just finished Ratchet and Clank on the PS5, which is freaking awesome. But like I still feel like we're waiting for that big one to drop.
Ratchet and Clank actually broke multiple times while playing it for the first 2 hours. I don't know what I did to that game.
Oh, wow. I didn't have that.
I fell into the skybox infinitely. I ran into a bug fighting a boss where if I used the rift power, it would stop fighting me.
Oh, wow.
What else did I do? It just crashed. Not great. I don't know. I did things. I don't know. It didn't like me.
You're magic.
to Pear's point, too, right? Like, we've given 110 in 2021, and that was to the final cut of Disco Elysium, which like was just making an already very highly reviewed game better, right? We gave 7 in 2020, right?
Yeah.
We gave by this point in 2020, we had already given 4 tens. So like 2020 was an explosive year in terms of like large, exciting games. And 2021, at least the first half of it, just like hasn't really been that yet. I mean, there's been some incredibly good games coming out. I'm not saying that. It's just like, it's, yeah, it's just been a different kind of pace to the year, right?
Yeah, for sure. It is the year that I think is more impacted by COVID than, you know, last year. Like a lot of projects just delayed. And then, you know, the Switch has gotten a lot of re-releases in recent times too. And like, those usually don't win, right? Like we've got, even in the past when you had a big game, like a shoe-in for Game of the Year, like a GTA or something come out on next-generation consoles, it's usually not picked as the Game of the Year because it's not original and new and all of that. Which leads us to, I think, Super Mario 3D World, right?
Yes. An honorable mention. It got a 7, but Bowser's Fury, I think, was widely well-received. I don't know how to categorize this game because we generally don't consider re-releases and remasters, but this has an extra mode. So where do we, where does this go? How do we consider this?
I love that game. And I was a little bit lukewarm about Super Mario 3D World coming back and getting the port. And then I played it in multiplayer with my kids and it's just really good. It's a wonderful Mario game. It's different, right? I prefer the exploration, more kind of open games like Odyssey or Mario 64 and all of that. But 3D World just does so many things incredibly well, and it can be tough and challenging and just fun. And Bowser's Fury, I absolutely love, but it doesn't feel like a grand scale Mario release worthy of a Game of the Year award, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is a smaller kind of concept of an open world Mario game. And what was there, I thought, was just amazingly wonderfully done. But I also am not sitting here months later going, remembering it and thinking I need to go back, which is how I'd feel about something like Breath of the Wild, for example. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's to me, the question of how we would categorize it kind of is a problem that solves itself, right? Where it's like, well, if we just categorize it as a re-release with new content, then we wouldn't be nominating it for Game of the Year because we don't do that for those types of games. And if we consider Bowser's Fury as a game of its own on its separately, I don't think we would nominate it because it's a fun but sort of experimental short sort of thing, right? So it's like, not speaking ill of it, but like, yeah, I think it's just like, you're right. I don't think that it's quite as you know, enduring as something else.
By that same token, though, we have given Game of the Year to Journey, which isn't exactly a long game, right?
Sure.
So it's not the length that determines whether something is the best of the year, but like it does. Bowser's Fury is very much like a full Mario game. It's a very different experience from something like Journey, which is a unique and kind of a game that hadn't been done before. And so it does feel like you're kind of getting a small scale version of a Mario game you love. And I think that will impact its chances to stand on its own as a Game of the Year winner. Maybe in the Switch category, though. I really love it. If you haven't played it, because you know, you've heard people say it's short. It's like, it is absolutely still worth it.
It's on sale right now, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Seth. And you could also extend your time with it as well if you try to get all the collectibles. Like, that always adds on quite a bit of hours and more challenge to it as well. And I'm just going to say this, but Mario Golf Super Rush, it got a 6. I don't think it probably doesn't stand to win anything. So moving on, games worth mentioning that weren't reviewed. I just wanted to do another quick shout out to Monster Sanctuary. It actually recently received a very huge update that also came to Switch. Yes, and it added a new game plus that lets you take your current monsters into a new game save where everything is much more difficult, so you can keep iterating on your team. It also added different difficulty levels because they said that the original difficulty level was too difficult for some people who didn't want to like get into the weeds of min-maxing their team, but they also added a higher difficulty level as well, and a whole bunch of other things, and like fixed multiplayer, and there's like a ton of good stuff in there. That was a great like Metroidvania monster collecting and battling game RPG.
Super great.
Yeah,
I'm glad I picked it up really on your recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for playing that, by the way, Seth. I appreciate it.
I actually forgot that I had it, and I'm going to go back to it now because I'm like, oh, I really like that game, like a lot. It does a lot of things that I personally enjoy. So, yeah.
Were there any other games that you, any of you thought were worth mentioning that have not been reviewed?
I was trying to think about this, and not specifically on Switch, I think. I've played a lot of, like, really small indie games on PC, but mm-hmm. that haven't gotten reviewed and were really fun. But yeah, I like Switch, I think, has been largely covered here and has had like not like an unexciting year. It's definitely been a good year. It's just been like we said, a little bit quieter.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty unexciting year. No, seriously. Like, and it's not the first time in Nintendo's history. Like, once in a while, you've got a year that's a little slower. And
yeah.
Nintendo is sinking a lot of time into Breath of the Wild 2, which obviously is missing this year. And I think it shows. I think I've seen this before when they have, like, a big looming project. It kind of seems to slow down everything else. And then, you know, like, this whole situation where offices are still not open in Japan. Are they still working from home? It impacts everything. Like, I mean, think about it. Like, I'm looking at our list, and I cannot imagine any Switch game winning Game of the Year at this point. And that, to me, sounds like an unexciting year for Switch, especially considering that Nintendo only has one console in the market. It's not like you're going, but on DS, there was this great game. You know, it's like, I appreciate Pokemon Snap, and I'm having fun with Mario Golf as well, and I think Monster Hunter Rise is really, really cool, but like, I don't think we're in the running here.
I let me rephrase that. Not an unexciting year for Monster Hunter fans, but otherwise.
Yeah, I guess that's why I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Rise did a lot of work on the horizon. Yeah. There's some good stuff on the horizon, right?
Yes, there is. That are, I think, might be even better, higher in the running than anything out so far. Maybe not Rise, but maybe some other things. We're not going to count Skyward Sword because this is a re-release and remaster, so there are no categories for those. But we are getting Monster Hunter Stories 2 on July 9th next week. And the first Monster Hunter Stories actually was nominated for Best RPG back when that was released for the Game Awards. I think we also nominated it for Best RPG that year. But I think you know, it might, maybe, who knows? But we're also getting Neo: The World Ends With You, which is also a really good JRPG. And we're also getting Shin Megami Tensei V, which is also a really, I don't know, I'm saying really good. I'm assuming these are going to be decent JRPGs.
That might be the dark horse. I think Shin Megami Tensei might be a bigger thing than people think at this point. Like, you know, the preview stuff that we've seen looks pretty promising. And, you know, this is getting the November 12th slot for Nintendo Switch. If nothing else is coming from first party, that might be the big one for Switch for the holidays.
Yeah. No, I think it. And I know that Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearls, those are coming out in November as well. But I don't, those are remakes. So yep. I don't think that's not going to go anywhere with that. Unless we have a actual remake category, which I think we may have done that before, but
we've done best remake, I think. Yeah. But you know, now you got to go. But is it a remake or a remaster or reimagining or repixelation or whatever? So
whatever. But we're also getting WarioWare Get It Together. I know Life is Strange has been critically acclaimed in the past. We're also getting Super Mario Party Superstars, which may be in the running for maybe best multiplayer game, and we might be getting Oxenfree 2. And then, of course, I have to mention Metroid Dread. So there's stuff to look forward to.
That might be the biggest contender, right? Like I always thought it's difficult for a 2D game to break through and shine, but hey, Celeste got Game of the Year from IGN before as well, right? Or 10. And so never say never.
Not Game of the Year, but yeah.
Not Game of the Year. It got a 10, that's right. It got a nomination.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. It was at least nominated, which means
it was up against God of War and Red Dead that year. So it was
a tough one.
Another stacked year.
Yeah.
Both, yeah.
I gotta say, and this will make me very unpopular, I'm a little concerned about Metroid Dread. It's just something about it. It's just not hitting right for me. I don't know if it's the art style or what, but it just feels a little off.
I'm with you. I'm with you that I'm not convinced yet. Yeah, I'll say that.
That's
much.
A better way to put it. Yeah, I'm not. Even though I immediately pre-ordered the stupid, you know, $80, $90.
Well, you had to, or else you'd miss out. So
that's extremely true.
But like Samus Returns was, I thought was a competent game, but it's not among my favorites, right? Like I feel like every, you know, if you think about Zero Mission or Super Metroid, like it just doesn't live up to those games. And like there were some critical choices that I didn't like standing still to aim, all of that stuff I didn't like. So we'll see. This might be though the 2.0 where they fix a lot of the complaints we had with the first one.
Yeah, I hope so. It's stupid because I'm only looking at like these little clips, so I can't say anything. But the thing that I like about Metroid and Super Metroid and Metroid Prime is that like instantly in almost every screen, you get the feeling that you're alone and the world is out to kill you. And here, I don't know what it is, but it feels like I don't get that feeling from the little bit that we've seen. And I don't know what it is. And I can't quite put my finger.
Are you saying it doesn't fill you with an adequate amount of dread?
It does not fill me with enough dread. Yes, that is true. Metroid Dread rolls its way into the Nintendo Switch this fall.
I think it'll be a very tense experience. If you think about like the most menacing parts of Metroid games were the ones where the timer goes off and it's boo, 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 evacuate immediately and you're running, or when the SAX is coming after you, right? Like those are the times that where you really feel like she's alone and she's running for her life. And you know, some people might not like that, just like they don't like running from Mr. X or Lady D or whatever in Resident Evil. But that I'm pretty excited to see how they pull off this gameplay element and how they hopefully turn it around where Samus gets so powerful that she's got her payback moment against these things.
Yeah, I can't put my finger on it. I'm excited, obviously. I cannot wait for a new 2D Metroid. I love Metroid a whole heck of a lot, but I don't know.
We'll see.
I feel like we're going to be giving this one a 7.
Oof. Oh, wow. You're predicting
someone
it.
Write that down.
All right.
Then I'll get the review and I'll be like, I love it. It's a 7.
So, yeah, those are all of the games that could have come out so far that may be Game of the Year contenders in some categories, maybe not the actual Game of the Year, but there are other categories that could be included with, and then games yet to come that may score quite well. But we'll have to see how we feel about those when they come out. We spent a lot of time on that topic, but I think it was worth revisiting all of those games this year that you should probably go play. Like me, I'm talking to myself. But also in other news, it is Star Fox 64's anniversary today. It turns 24. The US version came out on June 30th.
Wow.
2 months, 2 months after the Japan debut. Pear, I know you love Star Fox. And we also some quotes from the programmer, Giles Goddard, who is a Star Fox programmer, and some insights on that.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, if it's the anniversary, Nintendo is going to celebrate it in big ways with Star Fox 65 coming out as the big Christmas game this year. No, we haven't heard anything. You know, obviously the last game didn't do that well. Zero did only sold 400,000 copies on the Wii U. To be great, you know, it probably would do better on Switch, but like that's the lowest selling entry in the entire series.
Wow.
Yeah. So the programmer on the original, Giles Goddard, who, you know, you've seen his name around, he's often credited with creating the stretchy Mario face in Mario 64, like that little kind of playable demo at the beginning. He said in an interview, it would be interesting to do a Star Fox, but not how the other ones were done. I think I would just dial it back a lot and not in gimmicks like, you know, the stuff Star Fox Zero had, which he's referring to the dual screen setup, and maybe not even put in the free roaming aspects. I would just bring it back, pull it back into what made the original Star Fox fun and just make one based on that. I don't know how popular it would be, but it would be cool to try. What do you guys think? I mean, like Star Fox games, the original was a corridor shooter, right? And then with 64, number 2 was supposed to include it, but didn't originally come out. 64 added the all range mode where you're flying around, you know, and you're able to change direction and you're like in a 3D dome. And 64 also, though, sold with a gimmick. and that was the Rumble Pack. That was the game that introduced controller rumble, right? And then Star Fox Zero did the whole thing with the dual screen. Then obviously we had the 3D remake of 64 that was in 3D. Do you think a game sell without a gimmick?
Would you consider the first Star Fox, Fox's graphics as its gimmick?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's Star Fox has always had some gimmick that not other games hadn't done before. So
they could have done a 3D game with Mode 7, right? Like, but at the time, virtual racing was really popular in arcades, and so they took this plunge to put some extra power into the cartridge and do a polygonal game. So yeah, it's always been a gimmick franchise in some way.
I would say I would like to see a new Star Fox in the vein of Star Fox 64. I think it was a really fun game, but it's comparatively, I think, a lot simpler than other games out, like in general, in modern games. And I also wanted to ask all of you if you consider Starlink for the Nintendo Switch like a sort of pseudo Star Fox game, because I mean, ooh, it did have starships, yeah, and it did
Star
have
Fox in it, and on it, the yeah. Switch, and you can get like that whole game for like $3 at the GameStop bargain bin right now.
And it's really good, but
it's
different,
a great
right?
game. It's super fun.
And so this is what Giles is getting at, though. It's I gotta say, like when you did the mothership attack in Star Fox 64, which was based on Independence Day, that was all the hotness back then, right? Like with the big UFO. It was cool and it was exciting, but I can't say that the open world, the open roaming levels were the most fun. The most fun ones were the on-rails levels, and like sometimes they opened up where you would fly into a big capital ship, and so you had the kind of the strafing run from like the Death Star or something. Like it's I like that Seth is now a test signal if you're watching the video, the video version. But like I always feel like Star Fox is best when it throws this obstacle course at you and you navigate your way around this kind of this like turn left and right to avoid obstacles, lock onto enemies, get like bigger scores by getting most of them. Like that's when it's most fun to me. I would love to return to that, but will that sell? Will anybody buy it?
I don't know.
No.
Is it?
I will buy it.
Yeah.
Is it disrespectful of me to say that the gummy ship levels in Kingdom Hearts remind me of Star Fox?
Oh my god, it is so disrespectful.
They're the same.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Tom.
You picked the worst part of that game.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. She picked the Star Fox part.
Oh my god.
I like Star Fox, but I actually think the gummy ship levels are, I think this is a really good example of how you can still do Star, like, so it's really easy, I think, to look at Star Fox and say, well, I don't know if that genre would just do well nowadays. I don't know if people are interested in that sort of thing, if it's too simple, if it's too on rails, blah, 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 blah. But, like, it's really simple, like, to look at something like the gummy ships and sections and just be like, oh, there is a very clear difference between what Star Fox 64 is doing in those on-rail sections and what the gummy ship is doing in those on-rail sections. Because fundamentally, mechanically, they're identical, basically. But like level layout, the activities behind it, the story of like getting calls and being like, I need help, Fox, like all that stuff is like really compelling. And it's just like the gummy ship stuff is like entertaining, but like not nearly as deep as all of that. And like, mm-hmm. I think there's two very real worlds that Star Fox could go, which is it could go the route of Starlink and just say, you know what, we're going to try something different and it's going to have these sections, but like, it's just going to be a different kind of game because Starlink worked really, really well in the context of Star Fox. Yeah. Or I think there
also
is a world.
Sell.
Yeah, also didn't yeah. sell, but I think that was yeah. more the fault of like the $150 worth of toys it was also asking you to buy.
Right.
But yeah, I think that there is a world where you could make a compelling Star Fox game that is like the original Star Foxes that is really fun. I just think it's smaller scale than like a AAA Nintendo game. I don't think you can do Star Fox on the scale of Mario or Zelda Breath of the Wild. I think that people shouldn't be expecting that because, you know, Ikaruga and like top-down shooters persist to this day and they're not overly incredibly deep and huge, right? They're just like really good at what they do and they present themselves incredibly well.
I'd love a 2D top-down Star Fox, actually. Right. It'd be really cool, like a traditional shmup. But like, they could also go into the direction of a Star Wars Squadrons, which is a open-level, multiplayer-oriented shooter, like something more like Rogue Squadron they could do with like these confined levels. Or they could go back to the concept of, you know, using their characters. They have obviously known characters that are in Smash, and go Star Fox Adventures again, right? Like what they did with Rare.
Maybe let's not go that far.
They could.
Let's tone it down, Pear, okay?
Uh-huh.
Let's not put that evil into the world if it then happens. I'm just saying.
It's better than you remember.
No, it's not.
What about a Star Fox 99, like a Battle Royale?
I love it.
That'd be really cool, yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah. I'm perfectly fine with them making the original Star Fox, but just with like nicer graphics and tighter controls and like more than 3 frames per second, because I love the Super Nintendo Star Fox. I played hundreds and hundreds of hours on it. I found like all kinds of secrets. I love the branching structure of it. I love that there's a part where you shoot a giant galactic slot machine for no reason. And that's just that weird stuff. Like, yeah, bring that back. And the Battle Royale. Oh, yeah. I like that a lot.
I got one more.
Okay.
Star Fox Maker. That people design their own levels. They're so simple. They're all obstacles and shapes that you can create. Star Fox Maker. Because like Nintendo is not just going to do a new version of Star Fox or Star Fox 64. They just don't work that way, right? They need some sort of spark of an idea that's different. And that's how you get games like, you know, Zero, which it was built around the idea of having a tablet to look closer or utilize in situations. They're not going to just do Star Fox 64. So maybe a Maker, maybe something unique.
Well, hopefully we see something about Star Fox sometime in the near future, because it's been too long, unless you count Starlink, in which case it hasn't been quite that long. But still, too long since Star Fox. Also, happy 24th birthday, Star Fox 64. And really quickly, I wanted to talk a little bit about Kazuya in Smash, but a little bit more about that Smash presentation, Sakurai Presents, you know, Smash Ultimate. We now have 86 characters in Smash Brothers Ultimate, which
unbelievable.
Is insane. And that is not counting the characters like Pokemon Trainer and Pyra and Mythra that you can switch between. So, and that's also not counting the Mii Fighters, of which we got 4 more, which shattered many people's dreams, I'm sure. But Dante from Devil May Cry, Dragonborn from Skyrim, Lloyd from Tales of Symphonia, and Shantae were all revealed as Mii Fighters only, and only Shantae gets a music track with any of those. I know a lot of people in Japan specifically were actually asking for Lloyd from Tales of Symphonia as a character, as well as some people in the who are do I call them pro Smash Fighters? The Elite? Mm-hmm.
We call them pro Smash Fighters. Nintendo doesn't.
Okay. We call them pros. Some of the pros wanted Lloyd.
Yeah.
So Sakurai also went quite into Kazuya, but instead of getting into that, I just want to mention that he's getting 39 Tekken songs, and the only other Fighter Pass fighter who DLC that came with more was Terry from King of Fighters with 50. Everyone else got around like, I don't know, 6 to 15. What the heck? That's a lot of songs. Anyway, wanted to say there's only going to be one more fighter, and I'm pretty confident, because in Sakurai Presents, he said, up until now, we've created all sorts of fighters and stages, gathering all of these games, new and old, and compiling them into a single product is a task that has meant a lot to me. Now that I think about it, it's been close to 10 years since Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U and Nintendo 3DS systems were in development. I've been working on this for a long time. You could call it my life's work, but finally, the next DLC fighter will be the last one. There won't be any more after that. So, pretty confident there will not be a Fighters Pass Season 3. And I also just wanted to mention real quick, we really only had a 2-year gap between new content in Smash 4 for the Wii U and a brand new Super Smash Bros. Ultimate in 2018. So between 2016 and 2018 was the only 2 years we did not get new Smash content. So just looking back on everything that we've gotten from Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is insane.
Whenever I hear Kazuya say something like that, I always hear the song from the Sean Connery movie, Never Say Never Again. It's like... he may think we're never going to do DLC characters again right now, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, this is the dude that said the last three Smash Bros. Games were the last Smash Bros. True. Game.
I reasonably believe him that that's his intent right now. But like, this has these characters have kept this game franchise alive and interesting. I'm not a Tekken fan, so I'm not that excited about this edition. But it makes sense, and the way Kazuya has added is with just so much attention to detail and care. And you mentioned the number of songs. Like, it's such a wonderful celebration of fighting games. And it would be sad if the Smash story ends here, because they're not going to be working on a sequel for a very long time. Like, just how do you even do a sequel at this point? This game has everything in it, right? Yeah. And the only thing you could do to expand it is to bring in new franchises as they're announced, right? Like, Nintendo is going to have a new game, and third parties obviously have new games, and you could keep it going with character additions. I can't imagine they're going to start working on a sequel within the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, Mitchell and I actually were talking about this a little bit. I think it was yesterday, about like, where would Smash go from here? And both he brought up a really good point that I think I completely agree with, which is whatever the next Smash is, I think probably should go like reboot super much smaller scale, right? Like, because they can't top this in terms of the amount of content. It just would be unthinkable for them to top this in terms of the amount of content. So like, I would like to see them do a game with 20 characters, right? Like, pare it down to the core team, where they all behave way differently than you've come to know them from the last, five games, and just like, see what they can do to shake Smash up. Because right now, Ultimate to me stands as like pretty much the pinnacle of what this series can do. And I'm disappointed, or I'm bummed that they're not doing more characters after this, or they say they're not doing more characters after this. But I agree, it's like, it would be easy for them to do so. And I don't know. It's just, they've just done such a good job with this that it's sad to see it end.
No, it is. And I don't know, maybe we'll get some surprise characters down the way, like kind of like we did with Bayonetta and Corrin for Smash 4. But I guess we'll just have to see. But Sakurai did say he was retiring, and he also, I think, is not doing his Famitsu column anymore, starting soon as well. But, who knows? He said he's been retiring before, and he never has. But also, who's to say they could keep doing Smash updates without Sakurai, but I just can't imagine a world in which that's the case. So,
well, Jeff Kaplan left Overwatch, so stuff happens.
This is true.
Stuff happens. Sakurai is probably more closely tied to the Smash community than Jeff Kaplan is to Overwatch necessarily. Yeah. But it's very sad to see him go, and I think it would be it's a bummer, but dude's clearly been working a lot and deserves a break.
I agree. And I just so appreciate Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. By the way, I know some people criticize my use of saying bros instead of brothers when it's abbreviated, like Super Mario Bros. I can do what I want.
Who criticizes that? That's crazy. Get out of here.
There you go.
And I wanted to throw out some quick mentions before we move on to what we have been playing. But also, once again, thank you so much, Sakurai, for everything, all you've done for Smash. Just want to say it again. I really appreciate that series. But some quick mentions. Legend of Mana is getting an anime. It's called Legend of Mana, the Teardrop Crystal. This is going to continue the story after the Legend of Mana story in the video game, which Seth reviewed. And we'll be talking about that in the next section. But I'm worried. I'm a little bit worried about this anime, because even though it is being produced by the company that oversaw the animation for Mob Psycho 100, which has amazing animation, the actual animation studios don't have like anything of note as being amazing as like great animation. I think Helsing is okay, but the rest of them, it's a lot of like, I'm wondering if this is going to be actual traditional animation or if it's going to lean heavily on CGI, which can be done really well, but we'll see. I'm worried.
in the game, there's a little opening anime segment that is all hand drawn. So
okay, so maybe it'll be like that.
And charming. And sorry, it's very warm in Maine, so my camera keeps shutting off because it's a safety.
It's overheating?
Feature.
Oh, well, wow.
Yeah. Oh my god!
It's warm.
I'm sorry.
Like what is warm in Maine? Like 68?
So, well, yeah, 70 degrees.
Oh goodness. I also just wanted to quickly mention it is Mario Golf and Pokemon Snap's anniversary. We'll talk more about Mario Golf Super Rush and what we've been playing part of the show. And I know you heard a ton about it on last week's show as well, but happy anniversary to both of those games. Glad we got new iterations this year. Look at Nintendo, looking at anniversaries.
Huh.
Also, really quick, I wanted to mention that game company Sky, Children of Light, is now on the Switch and it's free. This is originally came out on the iOS in 2019 and it's from the award-winning creators behind Journey, which was our 2013 game of the year. And they also made the highly acclaimed Flower, and it's a social adventure that is set to warm your hearts, quotation marks, quotation fingers. But, and we were discussing a little bit before the show, like, how does this game make money if you don't buy it? And there are microtransactions, but they are not needed to actually play or enjoy the game. It's mostly you can buy things to gift to your friends that you are playing the game with. And you can also, there were season passes in the mobile game. I don't know if those exist in the Switch. So I don't know. But they said screw you to microtransactions, and that's cool. So cool, nice, free game on the Switch that you can play right now. But let's talk about some games that we've been playing. Per, why don't we start with you?
I'm playing this game called Mario Golf. I don't know if you guys have started yet. I'm still at the point in the game where I haven't run into what a lot of the complaints about the game suggest keeps it from greatness. I'm playing the adventure mode and I'm having a lot of fun. I always think the kind of like the golfing controls and the way it feels are just dead on. I love it. I love the presentation of it. The adventure part, the actual kind of navigating the map part, is pretty rote. And like one of my pet peeves in games is if a game teaches you a move, for example, you're playing the adventure mode and you're running between holes and the game teaches you how to speed up your character and how to manage your stamina and all of that and how to get around faster. Then you go back to the adventure and none of that applies. I always get so annoyed. I hate that stuff. Like it's like games that make you walk slowly in areas that you shouldn't have to walk slowly in. It's just giving you controls and teaching you things that you can do and then taking it away is dumb. I hate that. Don't do that. Oh. But the actual like controls, the way the worlds look, all of that, I think it's just really charming and fun, and I think the multiplayer aspect of it is really dead on. I love speed golf. It's really well made. The major criticism are there's just not a lot of it. It's kind of a slim package, which is, you know, a couple of Mario Tennises ago, we ran into that same issue where, you know, these games aren't as big and as, you know, as developed as they used to be in Nintendo's history, especially on handhelds. So we'll see once I run out of steam. So far, I'm having fun.
Yeah, I started this game yesterday and I was greatly surprised by how much actual golf terminology is in there. Like, you can learn a lot about actual golf by playing Mario Golf and pick up terminology and like figure out how to play. And I don't know if it'll teach you exactly how to like swing a club and hit a ball accurately, but you'll learn what it means when you miss the hole and are six negative six past par. Like, but it's fun. I've had fun with it. It looks really good, actually. And I had another technical difficulty yesterday. I think I have a technical difficulty monster in my house. I don't know, but I was I was playing an online game and I was sitting right here. My Switch was literally right in front of me on the desk and my right Joy-Con disconnected. And that signaled that I had an internet connection problem. So it threw us all out of the game. And then it wouldn't let me start a new room because it says I have internet problems and to come back later.
Oh, wow.
So it penalized me for my Joy-Con mysteriously disconnecting.
I think you're just cursed.
I think I am too. I don't know, man.
but so, Casey, you haven't played a lot of Mario Golf games before, right?
Yeah, not since the 64, and played multiplayer with it. It's been a long time.
So I do think that, you know, if for fans who are casual players and parents who are looking for a different type of game to play multiplayer with their kids, I think this is a good pick. I think this is a competent, good game. I think the disappointment sets in. If you're like a diehard Mario Golf fan and you really loved what like Advanced Tour brought to the table, I think that's when the disappointment set in, right? Like, because it does feel slimmed down.
Okay. It was fun, and the multiplayer was fun. I like how there are so many different modes. I think you could get a lot of use out of it with playing with friends locally, of course.
It's a great party game, and it is very, I hate the term, but it's very accessible. Like, if you have friends over, and friends are now allowed to come over in again, which is wonderful, you can have a lot of fun with people who don't play games a lot, because it is very easy to understand the base controls of, you know, hitting the button at the right time. So
I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. But Seth, you reviewed Legend of Mana.
I did.
Tell us about it.
I gave it a 7 because it is an absolutely beautiful game. Both the hand-drawn art and the pixel art are phenomenal. It just kind of runs up against the wall because it's a PS1 era action JRPG, and there's nothing you can really do to change that. Like, the story, and this is something that everybody knows. If you're a fan of Legend of Mana, you know there's basically, you don't know what you're doing. You're just running around talking to people, and they'll be like, hey, come with me, and all of a sudden a quest will start. However, if you get a guide, of which there are infinite number out there, and play this game, it's so worth it just for the level of work that went into this remake. Like, this is originally a 4x3 game because it was for PlayStation 1, and M2, who I love and talk about every chance I get about how much dedication they put into the work that they do above and beyond. But basically, they redrew every background so that it would be in high definition and fit 16:9 aspect ratio, which is unbelievable. Like, from a preservation standpoint, this I would put up there with the Star Trek The Next Generation preservation, which, if you're not familiar, they rescanned and re-edited the entire series so that it would be in high definition. They didn't use the original, like, tapes. They reused the film, and that's kind of what they did here.
Oh,
they
wow.
remade this entire game, or the visuals for this entire game. And if you like old sort of obtuse JRPG style games that are phenomenal and beautiful, like, absolutely pick this one up. It's very good. And I loved it. And I loved my time. All 20 hours of me being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just wandering around from quest to quest. I need to beat this game so I could give it a fair review. And yeah, you can beat the fastest story mission. The world record actually is 1.5 hours.
Oh,
and
wow.
That'll probably it'll be beaten in like, that with the loading times cut down on this version, I think that will probably be cut down to like 1 hour and 10 minutes. But like, yeah, it's fun. It doesn't hold your hand at all.
I'm into it. I love also first of all, the backgrounds look really cool, and the redrawn monsters and everything. And I love that they kept the pixelated sprite look. This, you know, made a joke about repixelations and stuff, but obviously, you know, Final Fantasy classics are coming back, and there's all this controversy around what the game looks like and the font, and it's like,
I don't like it.
Because we have such fond memories of these games that when it doesn't look quite right, it feels like you're playing an imposter, right? And like this is especially true when they take pixelated characters from the 8 or 16-bit age and then they change them. And like Mario, it's happened with Mario too, where you really got to get used to the new look whenever there's a generational upgrade. But I thought they handled it really well. I think it looks good, but still looks the way you remember it.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah. It looks like how, you know, probably most people who played this were children, whereas I was like 23. When this came out, but yeah, that's probably how you remember playing it.
Yep.
So I recommend it if you are into the Mana series at all. There's so many quests. If you want 100% this, I think it's like 80 hours. So
yeah. Oh wow.
A lot of game there.
I think I've said oh wow multiple times because I keep getting surprised by what you say, but I think the way that you described it is being remastered so that it looks the way that you remember, I think is a great way to put it. And I think it'd be nice for more games to have that. And thank you for telling us about Legend of Mana.
Just give all the remakes to M2 is what I'm saying. Just let M2 handle them all.
They're good.
So real quick, I've been saying mana. Is it mana or mana? I guess it depends.
Tomato, tomato.
Jersey. It's like, is it Mario or is it Mario?
Oh, well, it's Mario.
Tell that to the entire state of New Jersey.
Has there ever been, but do you think like people in New Jersey who are called Mario, then when you meet them, they say, I'm Mario? Like, if there are any Marios here, just, write us, nvc@ign.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let us know.
Yeah.
It's me, Mario.
Tom, what have you been playing?
Well, I have been playing the Monster Hunter Stories 2 demo, which I enjoyed greatly, but Kissy, and you and I talked about this a little bit. I think it's not quite the type of RPG I'm into in the like randomization gotcha sort of aspects of it. But that's okay, because I know that it is a lot of fun for a lot of other people, and I think it is a really cool game for sure. I'm not done with it, but I am losing steam a little bit with it from that demo. The other thing I wanted to shout out is I've been playing a lot of like random little things. So there were two games that are smaller that have been mentioned, I think, in Nintendo Directs that I really wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to, which is I played Labyrinth City, Pierre the Maze Detective, which was on a Nintendo Direct. That's like one of those maze book series that is very simple. You just like follow through the mazes and it tells a little story. It's very cute. So this is a digital version of that. It's really, really, really well made. It's incredibly cute. It is very simple. It is, I think, a great game for kids. Not necessarily a brain teasing puzzler like if you're looking for that, but it is, the worlds are beautifully illustrated, full of depth, full of character, full of flavor. So that's a very fun game, Labyrinth City. And then the other one I wanted to chat out was Lego Builder's Journey,
mm-hmm.
Which is I guess it probably doesn't have this on Switch. I played on PC, but it's a Lego puzzle game with ray tracing. It's got like hyper realistic Lego graphics basically, and it's just this very cute little, took me like hour and a half, 2 hours to beat, and it's just a very cute little wordless story told through Lego people, and it's a very fun little puzzly game, all where you're building terrain with Legos and trying to like guide a little Lego person along by placing bricks and stuff. And yeah, it's just a really fun little cute puzzler. And if you like little short brain teasy puzzlers like that, that is one that I think is worth checking out.
It's so charming because it embraces the kind of simplicity of Lego constructions, and the characters obviously don't have faces. They're not even minifigs, right? They're just these little kind of stick figures. Like single blocks stacked on top of each other. And like, but it's so charming and, you know, touching and, I played it on my iPhone. It's part of Apple Arcade, so if you have a subscription, you can get it free as part of that. And like, it's just beautiful. The way it's lit and the way the Lego blocks look and sound is just dead on for, you know, Lego fans. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. So those are some smaller ones that I'd shout out.
Cool. Thank you. And I'll repeat those names in a second, but real quick, I also just wanted to say I also was able to play the Monster Hunter Stories demo and a little bit beyond that for a preview, and you can watch that separately. I also was able to talk with the developers where I learned the three major changes that they made in Monster Hunter Stories 2 based on criticism that they received on the first game, but you can read all about that there. And there's one thing that I am a bit concerned about that they changed in the second game that they did not address in my interview, but I can't be sure if it's something I should be concerned about until I play the full game. So we'll get back to that when I play the full game. But otherwise, I love Monster Hunter Stories. I had a lot of fun with the preview build. It's a JRPG. There's so many things to do. Like, you get sidetracked so often. I can see very easily putting like so many hours into this game, like I not doing the main story. So I'm excited to talk about that once I get to play the full thing, and we can talk about that, I don't know, sometime soon.
Its name will forever be cursed for me because I'm just getting the amiibo for this game. They're issuing custom amiibo for it, and like in its wisdom, Nintendo teamed up with GameStop in the US again, which means it's a freaking disaster and you can't actually order them normally. I got this fly chasing me. Stop it. But I ordered from Amazon Japan, so we'll see.
I actually got the Palamute. Yeah, he's right here. I got the Palamute from Monster Hunter Rise.
Oh,
Japanese.
Nice.
Is this all showing up? No, here we go.
Also a GameStop collaboration in the US.
There we go. Yeah, so it was very difficult to get, so I got this one from Japan Amazon. Thank you for the tip.
Like, just don't put out amiibo if you're gonna only put out 200 of them at GameStop. Seriously.
Yeah.
Stop it.
So thank you for talking about Legend of Mana and Mario Golf Super Rush, Monster Hunter Stories 2 Demo, Lego Builder's Journey, Labyrinth City, Pierre the Maze Detective. And real quick, we have just a minute or two to answer this question from Tony Lent. And yes, do you think it's cheating or degrades the experience to make use of the save features in Nintendo Switch Online? Are there cases where you would encourage gamers to play the games without this extra save functionality?
Ooh. Yes,
it's cheating.
And the context
of this is it? I don't know, because...
But, hold on. But who cares? Because those, like, you will never play The Legend of Zelda 2 all the way through to the end unless you are a masochist about the save states. I am 100% in favor of the save states. And then if you want to, if you feel like the need, like you need a pure gaming experience, go back and try it. But otherwise, who friggin' cares?
Yeah, having the option, like if you are the kind of person who cares about this, you have the option to not use it, right?
Exactly.
And it is a little different from kind of built-in checkpoint and save systems. And the games obviously have gotten a lot easier. If you're playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, you can save, you know, before major encounters and all of that, or replay a battle without losing your experience points. Like, games have gotten easier. So when you go back to these old games without the option, as Seth says, some people are just never going to finish them, never going to play them. And that would be a shame too.
Yeah, the way I'll put it is, I would encourage people to go back and try it without it if you want to see what that experience was like. But I would not encourage people to go back and do it just because the frank truth is, if the technology and the capability was available easily back then, all of these games would have saves, right? So, like, the fact that they've added them now is just a quality of life adjustment.
Yeah, I mean, everyone else's solution back then was to just not turn off the console ever and hope nothing went wrong. So now we don't have to do that.
Yeah, and good job. And also remember, like, a lot of the 2D games were just like 3 to 6 hour experiences, right? And so having to replay the levels, it was part of the value. Like, they wanted you to play these games for a long time. And then obviously, you know, before that in the arcade age, games, you know, cycled through four screens and it was about high scores. So things just have changed and the expectations of gamers today are different.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. And thank you everyone so much for being on Nintendo Voice Chat this week. I think we had some really great conversations and I appreciate that. And if any of you would like to send in your questions to Nintendo Voice Chat, you can write to us at nvc@ign.com or respond to our question block post on Facebook at the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. Who would have guessed? And if you are listening to us, I do implore you to go over to the IGN Games YouTube channel and watch us to get glimpses of video game gameplay and also our faces, which may be less important. Who knows? But anyway, thank you everyone so much for listening and or watching Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. And remember, NVC is the only place you can.
Get the thing.
Get the thing.
Get the...
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.